look past it too, just plain understand. There must be another word, or maybe they just use yathar for the idea of, you know, well, I'm gonna remain here.
It might be using that way, yeah. Kind of depends on what the perception is, because like you said, there's both versions.
Okay, well, you all are there to know the routine here, so I'll just put the first of the Hebrew and get angry and vice versa.
Finished? Everybody ready? Okay, go ahead and exchange papers then.
Good. First section, there are 2 points each, all or nothing basically. The last section, 3 points each, as before. 1 point off for every error up to 903, half point for Doug H, and 1 point for letter of all point. Okay, so the first part, 2 points each. Lon should be to spend the night.
Number two,
Nothar should be to be left or remain. Number three, Rakat to wash. And it's used both transitively and intransitively, but I need to mention that. Ni'ates to spurn, number four. Number five, Rosh is head, chief, or top. The word's used quite broadly in a lot of ways. Nam is to sleep, number six. And number seven, Kadesh, to sanctify. To make holy. Taf is a collective term for children. So just children would be all you need. Mishmar should be a place of confinement, a jail, a guard unit, any of those. And Tehillah should be beginning or first occasion of some event. Question? Anybody? Okay, good.
All right, then the last part, Hebrew, erase this here. So. Did I get all the ones you didn't know?
No. Number one.
It's a little harder at the vowel point. You're trying to remember which ones were nifal and which ones were. Yeah, the plot is thickened. Okay. Pretty true, the Hebrew vocab is a lot harder than Greek vocab. Greek vocab's okay for the forms. Much of a problem. The Hebrew is both the vocab and the forms. Let's see. Truly, indeed, or however, should be vowel. Now, these are with 3 points each, 1 point for each spelling error. That means a letter or a vowel point, and then half point for Dagesh. Okay, the shade or shadow should be fail, sabi, fairy, mullet. To be firm, fixed, secure, not cone, nun. Thomas Koff, a little na'at, main shua, ayin, and tate. And that's a papak. Or is just o, aleph, kolomwa. To be wonderful or marvelous. Nun with Kirik, Pei with Shua, Lamas, and Kamas, Olive. Okay, then expel, send forth, let go. It's just a PL form of Shalak, so it'd be Shil. With the dagesh, be sure the dagesh is in the lama there. Almost should count 1 point for that on these PLs, but we'll keep to our pattern.
Okay, then the right hand or right side, Yamin, Yod, Thomas, name, Eric, Yod, Nun. Okay, then the word for sack or sackcloth is just that, sock. And even if it isn't a cognate, we can pretend it is. Okay, then the left side, symbol. Okay. So it's Queen, the Shua, name of Holm, who has an Aleph and Lamas.
How many points are there for letters and the vowel points?
Okay, it's 1 point for each letter, 1 point for each vowel point. 1.5 point for a dagesh. And so you can do up to maximum 3 long.
So you can't miss this any more than 3.
Spelling it wrong for 2 weeks.
No, no.
I always thought it was a
Kalate
ending.
Oh, yeah. You have to watch those.
All my graduate papers, I spelled it wrong.
So you put it down wrong on the sheet that you studied?
Yeah.
That's always...
writing it over and over.
No. That's one of the most frustrating types of errors.
I always look in
contract,
but I never saw that one.
Mm-hmm.
I did the same type of thing.
Uh-huh. It's easy to do. That's one problem with Hebrew, is that there are so many different things that sound the same, different ways of writing the same sound.
Did you get it?
Okay, well, so be it. As soon as you scored the papers and got your score, you should have your number. You got a question?
Yeah, we subtract them. Mine from
50. Yeah, 50 points. Point value at the top.
Let me double check that.
Simol,
yeah. That's what I have down on my paper, so sometimes you can copy those wrong. Yeah, Simol. Oh yes, they had a sheen instead of a scene. I'll take half point on that.
Sorry, very good.
That's not really a vowel point, so or Simol. If anybody else did that, be sure to take half point. Okay.
Now, as you recall, next Tuesday, a week from today, will be the grammar quiz. And like the ones in the past, it's going to be focusing on translation, although in this one, since we have some new grammar forms, I'm going to give you some questions on that, too. So let me just tell you exactly what I'll expect of you. And... we'll review maybe on Thursday, because the review for this won't take much. It's just a matter of the NIFAL and the PL, and I'm only going to ask you on the test. You'll only be responsible for the regular forms. In other words, I'll tell you what I'm going to ask you. I'm going to give you several forms, tell you to give me some of the forms for the NIFAL of Kathav and for the PL of Giddel. Giddel is the one I'll use for the PL because it's good and regular. In other words, there's nothing complicated about any of these. So Gedael and Kathav. Gedael in the PL and Kathav in the NIFAL. And I'll be just picking some forms. I'll say, so you should be familiar with the perfect, the imperfect, the imperative, infinitives, and participle. In other words, the full paradigm of that. Just pick those two verbs and learn the paradigm for that, and you'll be in good shape. So I'm not asking you for all the complications of one gutturals and all the rest, None of the complicated ones, just the simple ones. And I'll ask you for about 5 examples of each one, I'll give you the form. I'll say, I'll give you the person and number and so forth. So you'll get something like, imperfect, third person, masculine, singular, something like that. And then you have to give me that form. Okay.
How about, inverted forms also?
No, don't worry about converted forms. Just the regular paradigm forms is all you'll need. But you do need to be familiar with the imperative, the infinitive absolute, infinitive construct, participle, as well as the perfect and the imperfect. Okay, so that you'll need to know. And then beyond that, there's just some maybe grammatical things. There were four purposes given for the Nifal, different kinds of meaning for Nifal, and also four for the PAL, you know, four categories. For Nifal, it was incomplete passive, middle, reflexive, and resultative. And I expect you to be familiar with those. Not that we're really being that rigid with them as he is, but I'd like you to be familiar with those categories and what they mean. And for PL, there were four categories, too. There was the facultative or transitivizing, the denominative, intensive, and unclassified. So it's things. It's just about that's about the size of it, and then there'll be translation. So I expect you to know those categories of meaning, and then be able to give me for Kathav and the Nifal, you know, Niktav and the Nifal, what you know, be familiar with that paradigm, and then with the PL. So that'll be kind of typical of these various new derived verbs. I just want you to have a good understanding of the basic pattern in the strong verbs, and then the complications will take care of themselves. Okay, and we'll review on Thursday anything that needs to be reviewed. I think it's pretty straightforward, though. It's not too much besides what I just said. And then, of course, there'll be selections from the readings, and only from the ones that there were some of the readings we didn't do, only from the readings that we did in class and went over in class. And they'll be shorter on this one because I have other grammar questions than there were in the last test. But that'll be there too. Okay, lesson 41. Let's finish up the exercise on that, and we can get into the pool in 42. By my markers here, I think it looks like we got through verse 29 here, bottom page 203. We're doing this reading section. And
could I hear 29 again?
Yeah, I'll go over it again just to be safe on it. It should read, and if you take also this one from my face or from my presence, literally from with my face. But if you take also this one from my presence, from my face, and an accident befall him, you will send down my gray hair in evil to Sheol. Okay, and if you take this one from with my face or from my presence, and an accident befall him, you will send down my gray hair in evil to Sheol. Yes, literally, you will send down my gray hair in evil to Sheol. And the two Sheol is coming, Sheolah, it's got that, it's got that kamate ending, directional ending. Okay, any other questions there? Okay, verse 30 at the top of the next page then. I don't know who is up next. Anybody remember? It's been a long time. John, maybe you can. Let's see. We've got one for everybody here. So, 33. Yeah, that'll work out even. Okay. As long as nobody else comes in.
What kaboi?
Mm-hmm.
El abdeka abi wahana ar enenu.
Mm-hmm.
Itanu wana nafsho kishura.
Mm-hmm.
Banamsho.
Okay.
Well, and you.
Okay, that this will trick you though. There's two kinds of atad.
Oh, that's right.
This means and now. That one's really a tricky one. So and now.
Now as I come toward the your servant.
Right. And now as I come toward your servant,
my father.
My father. Mm-hmm.
and the other one is not with us.
Mm-hmm.
That takes the whole bridge. They're
mm-hmm.
not with us.
And right. Yeah, this sentence doesn't really end. I mean, it's kind of, I almost have to tell you that it kind of leads into the next one. So you're kind of left hanging here.
And his soul.
To bind.
Will be bound.
Okay, or is bound, you might say. Yeah, and his soul is bound.
It's a passive bound.
It's a passive participle, and it's got a feminine ending because of soul.
Okay.
So, is bound.
Is bound in his soul.
Yeah, is bound in his soul or bound to his soul, you might say. Yeah.
Okay.
One of the words, one soul is bound to another soul. In other words, there's a tight bond between them. Okay, good.
Okay.
So, and now, when I come to your servant, or literally, and now as my coming to your servant, we might say when, it's that temporal modifier again. And now when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad is not with us, and his soul is bound to his soul, then the conclusion is given in verse 31. Okay? In other words, if we come and the lad's not with us, and his soul is bound to his soul, there's going to be trouble. Okay, verse 31 then, Eric.
Yes. When I come, his soul is bound, also he pain and heart for men, will lean him of a leka, his shepa, of a leka, of the yokon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. You might remember this is a continuing the previous, so you might not even need an and here. It's kind of the apodosis to, it's the apodosis to the protosis above, as it were. So in other words, it got done saying that, and his soul is bound to his soul. You know, I come and the lad is not with us, and his soul is bound to his soul. Then you might just say,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now your key clause.
That there is not the young one, that the young one is not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we would have them down, you know.
Okay, that Wamase, I want to put the Wamase in there.
He's dead?
Yeah, he will die.
He will die.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And he will die.
Mm-hmm. Converted perfect.
He will send on your servant.
Yeah, his servants will be the subject. His servants will have sent down.
Your servants will have sent down.
Because that gray hair again.
Oh.
He was given in the this vocab. Yeah, gray hair, old age. This is in construct though. So it's the noun was seva, and that was gray hair, and then this is seva in construct. So it'd be the gray hair of what follows.
Oh, we would have sent on the gray hair of your servant.
Yes.
Father.
Right.
In sorrow towards Sheol.
Right.
Sheol.
Good. Okay? Good. It shall come to pass when he sees that the lad is not, he will die, and your servants will have sent down the gray hair of your servant, our father, in sorrow to Sheol. Okay? Should we try to run through that again? Okay. It shall come to pass when he sees... Now, the reason I didn't put an and in there is just because of the construction to the previous sentence. You might put an and also if you want. And it shall come to pass... When he sees that the lad is not, he will die, and your servants will have sent down the gray hair of your servant, our father, in sorrow to Sheol. Okay.
I was going to note the previous one, verse 30, maybe it's just maybe it isn't strictly in that, but it says that the soul is bound in his soul.
I think that maybe it may be idiomatic, or you know, bait does have quite a range of meaning, but it almost gives you a picture of an interpenetration and intertwining, you know, more than just kind of glued together. Adjacent is really, I think that's a fair analysis of it. And it's hard to translate in English.
That's why I love it.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Especially to them, and especially in this patriarchal system that they had, there was a real strong. Amen. Amen. Okay, 32, Peter. Okay.
Because your servant stood as pledge for the lad from with my father, saying, if I shall not bring him to you, I will be responsible because I stand against you all the days.
Okay.
That's
something of that nature, yeah.
It didn't help me much.
Yeah.
Couldn't find it.
Yeah, I shall bring him. Oh, is that the one? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for your servant, or because your servant stood as a pledge for the lad with my father, from with my father. English probably have to do with my father, something to make some sense. But saying, if I do not bring him to you, that's where that footnote is, then I will sin. Footnote 9, yeah. There's a note 8 on page 199. Did you check that? Is that the one where responsibility or...
Oh, it's the F they're referring to. I thought they were going to... I thought had taken on some meaning like responsibility or...
Oh, yeah, okay.
But it was...
Yeah, well... Yeah, it's just the if, I think, is all he's getting at.
If then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So...
Then I sinned against my father all the days.
Right. Uh-huh. So if I do not bring him to you, then I will sin against my father all the days. And then I will sin is kind of, is just taken from the converted perfect. So it's actually a perfect form, but you're kind of gaining this imperfect sense. In other words, if this, then this. If I do not bring him to you, then I will sin against my father all the days. Okay.
I
think there was something, there was some note a while back, it was a different one, I think, about accountability and so forth. I'll be responsible for it. I think that sense could be seen there. You can see, you know, in other words, he's going to be breaking his obligation, and that's the sense of the sin that he's talking about. He's going to miss the mark, miss the covenant, as it were, that he made, break his responsibility. So this is the normal word for sin, but it's in a situation where you're not sinning against God, but you're breaking a covenant with a person. You know, it gains a little bit different connotation. Okay, question further.
Remark is on page 187.
187. Oh, good. I'm glad. Look how somebody finds the pages here.
Remark 4 there.
Okay, I shall be accountable. Literally, sin against. Yeah. Right, and that was in the context of making that agreement in the first place, so I shall be accountable. Okay, and then if we follow that line of reasoning, we could translate this, then if I do not bring him to you, I will be accountable to my father all the days. So I would accept that too. Okay, 33, let's see, Doug, I guess you're next.
I would
Ya'al. That's the yellow there. Okay, Echal. Okay.
Now your servant shall stay it if you please. Instead of warriors.
Yeah. Yeah, it's literally under, but it's an idiom for instead of. Yeah, instead of the lad, instead of the boy.
That is the servant.
Yeah, a servant. You might almost say as a servant. The boy shall stay. I shall let your servant remain instead of the lad as a servant. Or just, remain instead of the lad a servant. You could just say a servant or a slave, or you might put an as in there. Because it's in apposition here, so either as a servant or a slave, or just remain a servant, a slave.
And the boy shall go out and say.
Okay. Also, it says to my lord here. It's a servant to my lord, l'adoni. So a servant to my lord, and the youth shall go with his brothers. Okay, you translate in the imperfect. I would probably put, because of the na there and the kind of imploring sense, I would take this as adjusted probably. Let.
Uh-huh.
And start off and say, now let I pray your servant remain instead of the lad, a slave to my lord, and let the youth go with his brothers. Take the adjusted sense because of the na there, especially. I mean, that kind of tips you off. And it is a third person form. Could be imperfect or it could be adjusive. But with the na, I would be inclined to put it as adjusive. So, and now let I pray your servant remain instead of the lad as a servant or a slave to my lord, and let the youth go with his brothers. Okay. And this go here, let me just check it out. Ya'al, that is adjusted form too. Ya'al is adjusted form from Allah. And so, yeah, the retracted accent and so forth, so that would tip you off too. So that's from from Ayin Lamed Hay. So it's a three Hay, and those can be tricky. Those three Hays get the shortened form for the adjusted, and that tips you off too. Yeah, right. That's pretty good. You got part of it anyway. Yeah, that one could be easy. A very difficult one to recognize. Three Hays tend to be notorious that way because in the justice and things like that, especially they drop the hay off, and then you're kind of looking at it and wondering, am I looking at it almost looks like a perfect with a prophet instead of commas in the first of one yod or something. It gets kind of nasty. Okay.
It's kind of amazing. I recognize what it meant. Without going through all those steps.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of our salvation, too, is that we have some context and some familiarity with the kind of ways that Hebrew is worded. And that can kind of tip off things, too. And if you recognize the verb at all, even if you don't recognize all the endings and differences, you can usually pick it up. That's the only reason why, when I bring the text to service and so forth, I try to follow along. I don't bring the analytical along to check up each form, but you can usually follow the continuity, and there's a few words you may not get, but you kind of, you're hearing the English, you know where they fit, and it's good exercise. It kind of forces you to keep going without slowing down for every little word, and it gives you a continuity, and then when you're doing exegesis, you can fill in those little words and so forth without any problem, but it's really good to be able to pick up a continuity type of approach to it, even though you're not picking up everything in detail. Okay, that's part of the reason for the reading out loud and so forth, too, to hear the sound of it, hear the flow of it, pick up a lot of things that you wouldn't get otherwise. 34 to Christ. Was there any other questions on 33 in translation of that? Okay, 34 then.
T-H-E-L-A-M.
Yeah, E-L-A. That's quite a word.
L-A-B. Wahanar Ainu Iti 10
Kereth, Sarah, Asher, Yemetha, Kef, Adi.
Okay.
For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me, lest I look on misery that this, I can't think of the last part of, found his father from my father.
Yeah, it's which will find my father. It's an active form, so matzas to find. So the misery which will find my father, the evil which will find my father. Okay. It's imperfect.
I'm looking for a subject for the chance. I need to personify.
Yes, yes. The evil. You're looking for a subject for which?
Well,
for the verb?
I see a new father was the object.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. I can't figure that out.
Yeah, you almost have, since it's an asher clause, it's the evil which will find my father. Actually, the evil there, the misery, the evil, and so forth is the subject. But it, when you have an asher clause, it kind of breaks it up a little bit, so you may not see it so clearly. It's almost saying the evil which it will find my father, you know. That's kind of the way they're doing it, but it's a little bit awkward to us. Or you could even take the asher as the subject, if you wanted to. The evil which will find my father. And the which can be your subject. But it's a relative pronoun. It's, where it's functioning like a relative pronoun going back to evil. Okay. The evil, misfortune, whatever. Did they just say misery in the for bara?
Oh, I did a little bit.
Yeah, okay. That's just use a little bit of context and so forth. So for how long can I go up to my father and the youth not be with me, except that I look upon the evil which will find my father? Okay. And they give you accept that here.
Sometimes you think with a word like evil, it's so general. If you see a context where the context here, it's not so much as something evil. It's like
a sin or
it's more like it's
calamity.
It's gonna be
sure. Yeah, I think you're justified, especially with a word like evil. Rosh is another one of those words, head, you know, it's used in a lot of ways, and you don't always want to translate it head because it sounds funny, you know. Like Bereshit, you know, in the heads, you know, or in the head or something. To them, it's the beginning. It's the head of the time and the top of the time, you know, as it were. And so you have to use some judgment in the way you translate it. And that's a good point. Okay. Yes.
Is bara with the evil?
Yeah, it's kind of that. It's that to look upon the evil. The idiom is that when you say look upon something, they use the preposition bath with it, and so that's why it's got that idea. It's look upon the evil.
Why does he change? Why does he do a note on pen? I mean, left. Fine.
Yeah, it does. Let's see. For how can I go up with my father and the youth not be with me, lest I look upon the evil which... I suppose maybe it's just the way he chose to word it. I can see a little bit of a problem in the sense that... let's see. This is real subtle. I don't even know how to describe it. It kind of gets to the point of which is the cause and which is the effect. How can I go up except that I look upon evil, which my... Yeah, it's real tough. I don't even know how to word this. There's not much difference there, though. I think, as far as where I'm concerned, there'd be no problem. I'm trying to say... I've got a thought here, but I can't quite describe it in words. The difference between lest and except that... I suppose it's usually lest is used in English to describe things that were antecedent to the other thing. In other words, this won't happen unless that other happens. And lest, you know, lest some evil befall you or something like that. It's don't do this lest some evil befall you. Usually dealing with, I guess it's a consequence thing. In other words, you're warning about somebody not to do this so that this thing won't happen. And I guess that does fit here really too, in a sense. We go up to your father first, you know, the thing's going to follow. Yeah, it does fit. So, no problem there as far as I'm concerned. Okay. I think the only thing they gave you for a pen was less, and accept that. Was there something about that knot, or did you get a knot in there?
So that knot,
yeah. Okay. They all seem to be pretty much equivalent, though, as far as function. Okay. So maybe my distinction isn't really a distinction. Okay, any other questions on this? All right, then he just continues in English the narrative down the rest of it. I don't think he expects you to translate that back into Hebrew. All right. And with lesson 42, we're going to move to another topic now. We're going to go back to Exodus and look at Moses and the burning bush, so we'll get a little bit different vocabulary, so it'll be interesting. So lesson 42, the pu'al. Corresponding to every pu'al verb, there is a passive counterpart known as the pu'al, characterized like the pu'al by a doubling of the middle root consonant. So your pu'al is going with pu'al, it's the passive counterpart. Just like with call, you have nif'al, now with pu'al, you have pu'al. And with hif'al, we'll have ho'fal. In other words, we've got three sets of active forms and passive forms. And then there's the hif'al, which is kind of a middle, it's kind of in between. So there's seven sets altogether. So this is the passive counterpart to the pu'al. And the pattern of vowels is more or less consistent throughout, with kibbutz in the first stem syllable and pasach when not reduced in the second. So your basic regular pattern would be kibbutz, pasach. So you're just, and then you have the doubling of the second radical also. So for the pu'al, gidel, you've got the pu'al, gudal. So that's pretty nice.
They can't miss kibbutz.
No, kibbutz is really identifiable. Although, once in a while, the kibbutz isn't there. When you get the second, when the second radical cannot take the dagesh, you get sometimes a compensatory lengthening, and the kibbutz goes to a cholam. So that might be the one where there's one coming up here. I think that's borak down there, the two guttural pattern. The reason for that is that the resh can't take dagesh, and so they want to do something. Some of them are virtual doubling too, where nothing appears, but this one takes a compensatory lengthening, so you get borak, and that one can be confused. You know, there's some calls that have a cholam in the first syllable, and you know, in other words, that might be harder to recognize than any of these others. But by and large, that kibbutz is very identifiable. Okay, so gidel and gudal, bikesh and bukash, hilel and hulal. They're all pretty easy to identify that way. Pu'al forms are relatively infrequent, being most often encountered in the participle, which functions as a passive to that of the pu'al. So you'll see this more often in participle form than you will in other forms. And so you've got here mibbarek, and as the active pu'al participle, and then miborak is your passive participle. And there's one with, you know, that's from barak, it's got that form. But then mibakesh, and then mibukash. That's real easily seen. Okay, then the attested forms are as follows. First, for the regular, gudal, the imperfect, yigudal, and the participle, nigudal. No imperatives or infinitive constructs here. So, at least not attested. So, in the on the test, this is the one I think I had mentioned, the verb that you're going to have. I gave you the PL. Yeah, that's for PL. The PL, it does have imperatives and so forth, but it's kind of hard to command somebody to be something, you know, to have the verbal action done to them. So generally you're not going to, in the passive, see a lot of imperatives, or it can be done in some instances, but it's generally not common. Okay, then the two guttural, borak there, there's the one where you have the compensatory lengthening, and your borak, and then your participle, the borak. Notice the participle has a commas in the second instead of a pasach. It's the main thing to note there. The three aleph, mula, kuyas and aleph there, you get the commas. Yamula and mimula. So nothing unusual except for the kuyas and aleph and the lengthened commas. The three hey, una, yuune, and unoth for an infinitive construct, and meune. Those are typical, anyway, of three hays, getting that sagol hay at the end, getting the homa tau in the infinitive construct. So those aren't really anything new. Remark at the top of the next page, With roots 2, guttural virtual doubling is also attested. Remember what virtual doubling is? That means nothing really happens. And so you will see some forms that are that way. So nukham, for example. The 2 guttural there, there's no dagesh. You might have expected nokham, but it does, as compensatory lengthening, but this one doesn't lengthen. So it's virtual doubling, it's called. He was comforted. Corresponding to the PL form, nicham, to comfort. The more common form, borach, shows compensatory lengthening of kibbutz to cholam wow. So that happens more frequently. The lengthening of the final stem vowel in mula should be an expected phenomenon by now, as should the conformity of the stem endings of verbs from roots 3 hay to those of other verb types. In other words, we've seen 3 hays do about the same kind of thing. Once you learn the call for 3 hays, the rest of nifals and pls and now the puals do about the same kind of thing, same situation. Okay, so here you see the paradigm for the perfect, the puol, you've got gudal, gudala, gudalta, gudalt, gudalti, gudalu, gudaltem, gudalten, gudalnu. So you've got it, and once you know what that first one does, then the rest of it's just like what you learned for your call. And then the imperfect yigadel, tigadel, yigudal, tigudal, tigudal, tigudali, agudal. Of course, they all can't take shua, so you've got the chata fatak there. Yigudalu, tigudal, tigudalna, tigudalu, tigudalna, and nigudal. Same thing in the imperfect. Once you've got the basic pattern, you just follow it right through. So these regular ones aren't really too much to worry a whole lot about once you've got the first basic pattern. And then you're going to see that kibbutz in all of these forms. So the regular ones will all be recognizable. Participle, nigudal, and then nigudala, which is a common say for the feminine. Mugudaleth, another optional form. So the feminines have these 2 different forms. Nigudalim and nigudaloth. Okay, Miguzelath would be your kind of a segulate pattern. Okay, then a note here. Then, of course, they've got the 2 guttural and the 3 hay, the 3 aleph and the 3 hay patterns there. I don't think I'll go through and read them through, but they're there for your information. Now, there's a note at the top of the page. One occasionally finds kamutz katuf for shurek in the first stem syllable. So you may see kos u and wonder what in the world is that. And they were covered here. So once in a while, you'll get a kamutz katuf instead of the shurek. Instead of the kibbutz. And you have to keep your eyes out for that. No way to predict it, I suppose. The passive represented by the pu'al has no expressed agent. I think that was mentioned before, that they don't express their agents in these passive forms. So, sugar lo hadavar, the matter was related to him. You won't see an expressed agent, you know, like by so-and-so. Hebrew doesn't set things up that way. They'll just use an active form when they want to do that. Because this corresponds semantically to an active verb with an indefinite subject, somebody, someone, someone, there, one, or they, it may be followed ungrammatically by an object with et. You see what he's saying? It's ungrammatically because normally a passive verb form can't take a direct object. I mean, just by its very nature, it's passive. It's receiving the action, it's not performing the action. However, with certain types of verbs, and if the verb corresponds semantically to an active verb with an indefinite subject, one did this, they may be understanding it that way and going ahead and putting a direct object with it. And look at the example here. Sugar lo es hadavar. One recounted the matter to him. Okay? See, the sugar is actually a passive verb form, a pu'al form. And so normally it would be translated, something was, normally you'd be thinking the word was recounted or the matter was recounted to him. But the F marking hadavar shows that it is not the subject of the action. And so it's the direct object, as it were. And now you're having to almost understand that sugar is almost an active verb of an indefinite subject, one or someone. And it's kind of a I don't know what's taking place here, but it seems like meaning has overridden grammar here.
Well, you didn't say it was recounted.
Yes. Yes, but if you say, it was recounted, then it's the matter that was recounted, yeah. And you get in trouble there. You almost have to supply a one or someone recounted. And then you're making the verb an active verb form. So that's what's odd about it. You've got an active, a passive form functioning like it's active, and then getting an indefinite subject with it. So I don't know really how we can justify it. All we have to say, they just the language, the meaning of words kind of overrode the grammar here, I think. Okay, and did the second bell ring already?
No.
Okay, it will any second, I suppose, here, so I don't know if I want to go too much further, but it says the second construction peculiar to passive verbs is that in which a preposition is omitted before a specifying noun. Okay, we're going to get some kind of funny things, and you ought to see the logic that he goes through on this one. These next four, A, B, C, and D, is trying to carry you to understanding of what's happened here. It's really kind of a small point, though. So we'll cover that tomorrow, and no assignment for tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll just go through the text here, and if you want, I'll tell you what we're going to be doing in this chapter if you want to get ahead, but we won't make it anything formal. We'll be doing part A, we'll be doing number 1, number 9, and number 17. 1, 9, and 17 in part A, and then part C, the reading, we'll be doing all of that.